Welcome, 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 beautiful gods and goddesses, to Unstoppable Love with Lauren and Friends. This is the second show, and I am so excited to be here. I got that first show done, still getting my sea legs here, but I'm so excited to be here. And for everyone listening, thank you for being here. And we have an exciting show today. We're not going to be taking calls today, just so we can have time with our guest, the first guest. I'm so excited. This place is a space for love. It's a space holder for love. I love to play. I love to connect. I love to collaborate and interact and give my brothers and sisters a place to share their hearts, their projects, their passions. So that's my intention for the show. So without further ado, let's dig in. I'm going to introduce you to the first guest. I'm so excited to have this person with us. So as the first grandchild and niece in a large Italian family, Carrie was showered with a lot of love, experienced some serious craziness, and enjoyed a great deal of wonderful pasta, most often created by her favorite person, her grandmother. After graduating college with a degree in biology, she worked for NASA as a microbiologist until her idealism was damaged by experiencing government waste up close and very personal, as the saying goes. After earning a master's degree in education, she taught 8 to 18-year-olds in both public and private schools before moving to Panama, where she taught creativity and art to 18 to 80-year-olds. Additionally, as a former massage therapist and construction business co-owner, she has been strongly service-oriented in her communities. Training as a transformational seminar leader exposed her to many new perspectives, including the awareness and expansion of consciousness, which has been her prime focus to this day. About 6 years ago, Carrie became critically aware of embodying personal sovereignty as a way to be in conflict-free and mutually supportive relationships. And for the last 3 years, she has been sharing her education, tools, and personal experiences on divine personal sovereignty in two legacy humanitarian organizations and her own Play Place community on Telegram, where we met. Carrie, I'm so excited for you to be here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for bringing me here as your first guest. And even more important than that is to bring this topic to everyone, which is so critical and vital to having great relationships.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm happy to have you here. The reason why I chose Divine Personal Sovereignty for this, the second show, was it's the foundation for everything, for all relationships, communication, honoring differences and choices and preferences that are unique to each individual being. And I just found it to be the paramount, just so important moving forward from this foundation into relationships of all aspects, of romantic partners, of twin flames, or business relationships, doing our humanitarian projects, friendships, family, you name it. It is vast, as you know. So just having the awareness of divine personal sovereignty and what it is. I would say for me, I had never heard of divine personal sovereignty until we met, until you, even the terminology was just foreign to me. As you know, and as many know, they don't teach you this stuff in school, so right. To speak.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Ought to be the first thing we learn when we are at that age of reason for children, so that they start getting a sense that they have personal sovereignty.
Exactly. And I, can speak for myself. A lot of what I was just surrounded with in school and organizations and just in general was just do as you're told. Don't ask questions. Just don't make waves. Just keep your mouth shut. And really, it just kind of we were taught that this was normal, and when actuality, it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So for divine personal sovereignty, like I said, I had never heard about it. I was unaware of it. And learning about divine personal sovereignty, when I did your seminar, your workshop, your play place workshops on divine personal sovereignty, it was so much fun because it was a way for me to learn and evolve and grow. And it was in a place that was safe. I could share my heart. It was interactive, it was engaging, and it was no judgment. Like I shared personal experiences, not from a place of victim, but a place of, okay, I'm aware that, I was crossing dominion there, and how can I make this into a positive experience and learn and grow from it? And then be the way shower for others if they choose.
Right.
So it has transformed my life in many areas, and like I said, just gave me the permission slip to say, oh, you know what? We have the ability to believe, choose, do whatever we want, and no one's going to tell us different.
Exactly.
Right. So I had anything you want to say about that, Carrie? Anything to add?
Well, just you mentioned people not even knowing the phrase personal sovereignty. We've all heard national sovereignty. We've all heard, many people have heard the sovereignty of God, in religious context. But personal sovereignty is something that is I've been aware of it for, as I say, for at least 6 years. But the phrase is not common for us yet. Hopefully, we're going to help change that, and everybody is going to, at one point, come to realize that they are personally sovereign and they came in that way. One of the reasons I call what I share divine personal sovereignty is because it's a birthright. We come in free on every level. Our society and our programming and indoctrination changes that feeling that we have as a child. But, and a perfect example of this is if you take a very young baby and it's in its parents' arms and the parent tries to give the baby to another person in the family or a friend, let's say, you've probably all seen a situation where the baby recoils and goes back to the comfort of its parents' arms, doesn't want to be passed off to someone. That baby is, even at that young age, expressing sovereignty. It's letting the parent know that it chooses not to be given to that individual for whatever reason. We know babies come in, wired for consciousness. They come in that way. So if we can start trusting our children when they're young to express their desires to us, then what you and I experienced growing up will change for everybody.
That's right. That's right. That's beautiful. I love that. Oh, I love that. And I can't wait to see how things are going to change. It's just going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you up for playing with some questions?
Sure. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, Carrie, what is your definition of divine personal sovereignty?
Okay. Well, first of all, this came to me over time in layers, and I'm going to give you one definition that's part of my definition, just so we're all on the same page. And that is the definition of a living soul, which is a being who has consciousness and self-awareness. So that is our little foundation there. So my working definition has three parts, which I, as I say, have come in layers for me over time. So to start with, all living souls have the birthright to be, do, have, believe, and choose whatever is best for them. Part two is without any outside judgment, criticism, coercion, manipulation, etc. And the last piece of it is, while that living soul is also accepting complete responsibility for their choices and actions. So all living souls have the birthright to be, do, have, believe, and choose what is best for them without any outside judgment, criticism, etc., while also accepting complete responsibility for their choices and actions. So basically, we get to do anything we want, and we have to be responsible for the ramifications of what we do. And often when I present this to a new audience, the first question I hear is, what about not causing harm to others? That ought to be part of the definition. And I get it completely, because those of us who are coming from our hearts always want to take care, great care as Q would say, of those around us. However, that's a bit of a slippery slope when you're talking about sovereignty. Because if you put any conditions on it, you automatically remove sovereignty. You can't tell somebody that they can't hurt another. And I know this sounds strange, so just bear with me for a second. We can't tell anybody what to do, be, have, choose, and believe, including not hurting another. Where the responsibility comes in is that if they do hurt another, they're going to be responsible and they are going to experience some kind of consequence or ramification. But we can't dictate behavior. We can't dictate beliefs. We can't dictate choices. So that's an important piece, and I hope everybody can kind of feel into, I'm not going to hurt anybody, and that's my choice. But honestly, I can't dictate anybody else's behavior.
Right, right. Oh, that's beautiful, Carrie. I love that. I love that. I so resonate with that. And like you said, this should be taught just very, very early to the children. Mm. Wow. Okay.
To families now. Right now, we can teach it to our children. And of course, many of us are hoping and planning for a new educational system that would automatically include this.
Right.
So we can share this with families right now and imagine the dynamics that could change in a family if everybody in the family held this perspective for everybody else in the family, including parents for children, children for parents. Obviously, if you are a caretaker for a child, you do have a responsibility to keep them safe. That's where, you know, so there's a little bit of a fine line there with parents and young children. But as I said, even babies can express their choices.
Yeah, I love that example you gave. Wow. So now let's segue into what is Q's perspective on divine personal sovereignty. I'd love to hear this.
Okay. Well, Q and I had a long conversation about this quite a while ago, and he gave me his working definition, which is, I am a spirit that came to have an experience of what it's like to be a human being. And I have a seating process called the soul. How my light body seats itself in my soul is the expression of myself. And I get to express myself however I want in the body I chose, the genetics I chose, and the geography in which I live. So that's his be, do, have corollary. I get to choose what I am, where I am, and how I am. And I laugh when he said this. And I own that all day long. And he said it with great gusto. He finished it up with, anyone who tells you what you are, where you are, or how you are, is living in the past. They're not with you in your present. So I love that. And it's his way of saying, you know, we're both saying the same thing from each of our perspectives.
That's beautiful, Carrie, and it makes me think back to, if somebody called me a name or somebody said, I remember when I was in I was graduate school, and I asked a professor if I could stay afterwards to get some help. I was in pathophys class, and she basically, in a roundabout way, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you don't have what it takes to do this,
Ugh.
So just the words that, just the words, how can you, that's violating sovereignty,
Absolutely, absolutely. How many dreams have been broken by someone violating another's sovereignty, telling them what they can do, what they're capable of, what they should do? I don't even use the word should in my vocabulary anymore because it inherently violates sovereignty. If I'm telling you what you should do, I'm not honoring you to choose what's best for you.
Right, exactly. And I'm not knocking the educate, the educators, and I'm, it's just an example. So,
Right.
okay, all right. Well, Carrie, how has your life changed since discovering divine personal sovereignty?
Wow, so many ways, so many ways. I remember a partner I was with many, many years ago said to me, "You get so disappointed by your friends not meeting your expectations all the time." And it really stopped me in my tracks. I had not really paid attention to the fact that I was experiencing a lot of expectation of how people were sup should supposed to behave and getting disappointed when they didn't meet my expectations. That was my first probably conscious awareness of sovereignty. I didn't have the words for it then, just as we said, most of us haven't had those words, but it really landed for me, and I started reevaluating how I was being in relationships with others and expecting things of them. So that was many, many years ago, and that was the first really big piece. But in terms of over the years that I've been consciously paying attention to sovereignty, personal sovereignty, it brings a tremendous amount of peace. I don't have to attempt to fix anything anymore with anybody. First of all, it's not my job, or not our jobs, but we have been so conditioned to judge and then to offer unsolicited advice, guidance. And generally, we do it from our hearts with what we call, a positive intention without realizing that we're violating sovereignty as we're doing it. So the peace that comes with it from being able to simply, I have a little three-word phrase, allow, allow, allow. Just allow everybody to be who they are without judging them, without trying to change them, without fixing them. That is a tremendous gift both ways. It brings peace for us and it maintains the connection that we have with another. And from that connection, we can be creative together. We share compassion with each other. We can collaborate with each other, all within, a container, if you that word, in a space of honoring each other. So it's just changed everything. It's transformed my entire life. And as I've been offering this education for the years that I've been doing that now, so many people have told me that it's changed their lives too. So
Wow.
it's just a gift. And it's really simple. Just, it's kind of like a light switch. It's like, I'm going to switch from feeling like it's my job to impact anybody else's life to I'm going to love them where they are and I'm going to allow them to be who they are and I'm going to stay in connection with them because the connection is the thing that's most important.
You are exactly right, Carrie. You mentioned something that brought up just wanting the fixer. I've always been the fixer. I want to help people. I want to quote fix people, and it does. It comes from a place of of love, because I just want to see everybody happy and enjoying their life. But I was doing it to a point where I was, put the oxygen mask on first before you start helping others, right? I needed to take my own advice. And I think maybe it goes back to just being a nurse and just wanting to help and fix and make things right. Because I can't stand to see someone hurting or suffering. But at the same time, allowing things to be what they are, and that beautiful acceptance and the peace that comes from being in that place of acceptance. And if you have, relationships with people, and you might not be on the same frequency band, that's fine. But honoring where they are, not trying to campaign, oh, this is the way it should be, and this is you should believe what I believe, and no, that is just wrong up and down all day long. So yes, I had to stop being the fixer. I did that in many relationships, trying to fix, and it was really, who was the one that was suffering the consequences? It was me. It was my body. My body was manifesting physically from meeting that resistance of that person wanting to and being open to growth. And it's beautiful if you can grow with someone, but if they're not at the same place as you, it just doesn't work. It creates friction. It's a mess. So being able to allow and accept, and it's just so peaceful.
And you mentioned something that's really important. You re received resistance when you attempted to do that. And that's what happens when someone feels like we are trying to change them in any way. They naturally become defensive because it doesn't feel good. And in that defense, separation happens. And so we lose the connection. We damage the connection. Sometimes we lose trust. As I say, for me, the connection is the starting point for everything. So if we do the allowing, then the other doesn't feel backed into a corner from which they have to defend themselves. And that backing into the corner is the separation as well. So, and the other thing you mentioned as a nurse, I was trained as a teacher, you were trained as a nurse. I was also trained as a massage therapist. Anybody in a quote unquote helping profession, that's a liability for us because there's a huge difference between helping and assisting. Helping has inherently a feeling that the person needs something rather than assisting someone when they ask us for something. So, anybody out there who's in any kind of counseling or healing or nursing or teaching, we have to be especially careful because part of our training did not include honoring sovereignty, but did include the idea that we're here to help you.
Right. Wow. Powerful. That's powerful. Very powerful. Okay. Well, let's see. The next question I have for you, and we already touched on this, just right by me sharing some of my experiences that we just talked about. So we all love having tools in our tool belt, right? So let's talk about some tools with Divine Personal Sovereignty. What are some tools that we can use to facilitate healthy, authentic, and excuse me, what are some of the tools that you share in Divine Personal Sovereignty? We'll start with that one first.
Well, you started there with authenticity, transparency, and vulnerability. I don't necessarily call those tools, rather, they are attributes that foster embodying our own personal sovereignty and honoring the sovereignty of another. So when we're in our own authenticity, we're being genuine, true to our spirit, and honest, the other person can feel us as we truly are. So that's a starting point for all of this, is authenticity. And then we add on top of that, or with that, transparency, which for me is being open without secrets. And that allows the other to see us as being our true self. And then the third piece of this is being vulnerable, being willing to be vulnerable. And vulnerable has gotten a bad rap, because a lot of the definitions, the, you know, traditional definitions for it is weak, you know, in danger, etc. But that's not the vulnerability that I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is being accessible, being defenseless, expressing one's true feelings, which allow us to stay in connection with another without being afraid of what they're going to do and say. So it's a willingness to be seen and known for who we are. And then the other gets to experience us as our true self. So when we are in those, that space of authenticity, transparency, and vulnerability, we're available to the other fully. They can feel that and see that and know that in their hearts. They can, you know, it's evident. And that's a great groundwork from which to get into any kind of conversations. You know, I love that Q uses the word opportunity instead of challenge. So it affords us the opportunity to address a situation or a conversation from those, that place of authenticity, transparency, and vulnerability. And one of the great benefits of us embodying our own sovereignty is that gives permission for everybody around us to start feeling able and comfortable to be who they really are in our presence. So those three attributes of authenticity, transparency, and vulnerability kind of set us all up for a big win,
right,
from the get-go. So that's kind of just a foundation. And then if we want to get into tools, the first tool I would say is, most of us on this call probably know the first tool, which is the command to take all the head to heart drop command, to take all the thoughts in our head, put them into our heart, because that keeps us out of judgment, and that keeps us out of mind energy, and that also keeps us from being hijacked, which many of us are aware of. So I kind of have my own version of the head to heart drop. I command my spirit and prime creation to continuously move the thoughts in my head to my heart, dissolve them there, and make me real now. And the part that I added is the continuously, because we're just bombarded with thoughts all the time. So I just kind of figure, let's just start the day this way and just keep moving them all day long so they don't grab hold of me. So that is tool number one, which everybody probably who's listening already has been gifted from Q. And I'm going to share with you three that I love that are great starting points for someone who's just getting an awareness of personal sovereignty, just kind of getting their little toes in the water. How do I actually embody my own sovereignty and honor the sovereignty of another? How do I do it? So the first one is, I love to use, is a tennis visual, because pretty much everybody's seen a tennis match in their life one way or another. And it's called staying on our side of the net. So in tennis, typically a player and or his tennis racket is not allowed to cross over the net. So if a player does cross the net, either with part of their body or with their racket, it's considered a fault and they lose a point. We often cross the net in our relationships when we think we know better than the other, when we give unsolicited advice, or when we're in judgment over another person's choices or behaviors. So if we can visualize standing on a tennis court on our side and we see the net there, and the other person that we're communicating with or, you know, playing with or whatever is on the other side of the net, and they say or do something that triggers us, brings up a, no, that's wrong, or you shouldn't say that, or you shouldn't do that. If we can visualize ourselves physically staying on our side of the net with our racket on our side of the net, and again, allowing the other person to be, do, have, choose, and believe whatever is best for them without rushing to say, no, you really ought to be thinking about it this way, or you ought to do it that way. So the staying on our side of the net is an easy one because everybody can pretty much visualize standing on a tennis court. And, you know, just bring your arms up to your heart, stay in your heart, stay on your side of the net, and allow the other to be and have whatever they want. So that is a really valuable visual that we can all use. And then the next one is using I statements, opening phrases, and invitations to conversations. So often when we get upset, we have a natural tendency, and I don't think that this is certainly not a light being tendency. This is something we've learned and been trained because it's been done to us from the time most of us were children, is that if somebody doesn't like something that we do or say, it's often quite common for them to start their sentence with, you did da 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 da, now I'm upset. So you statements automatically point a finger at the other. And that, it goes back to the same thing of creating separation and defense. So if we use I statements, we can express ourselves from our own experiences rather than from what we quote unquote think someone else has done. Because a lot of times we imagine something that another has done in quite a more negative way than it might have actually happened, right? And at the same time, if we're using an I statement, we're taking responsibility for our own experience. So what happens when we use I statements, I feel, I wish, I choose, I felt, I trust. We start there. We start from our side of the net again. And then we can express what our experience is without the cloud of the finger pointing and the judgment from the get-go with the other. So, you know, I wish we could visit your mom on a weeknight rather than on Sunday so that we could actually have a whole day to be with each other and play, rather than you always take me to your mother's on Sunday and now I have no rest in the whole week. You can feel the difference energetically of those two ways of communicating. So I statements. Kind of like I statements is opening phrases. So opening phrases is a way to start a conversation that allows both parties to stay present out of instant reaction and actually in true communication with each other. So for instance, last time we went to visit your mom, I felt uncomfortable because she, whatever, she didn't like what I was wearing. So could we do it differently next time? Here's another one. When I heard you say blank, whatever, fill in the blank, I felt hurt because and then fill in the blank. So is it possible for us to change the way we speak about that topic? So that's basically staying in connection, staying in communication, and at the same time expressing a need that doesn't push the other person into that resistance, you know, defense and separation. Here's another one. Is it possible that we blank instead of blank so that I can feel better about whatever? So as you can feel in each of those examples, the speaker is coming from neutrality, from a place of peace. They're simply expressing their needs without creating separation. So that's opening phrases. And then the third one is using perspectives, experiences, and preferences in your communication to stay in connection. So for instance, from my perspective, fill in the blank, what's your perspective about that? Or from my perspective, da 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 da, and I feel however you feel, what's your perspective and how do you feel? I'd love to hear your perspective about blank and see where we're in alignment with each other to start with. So all of that opens up communication. It allows the speaker to actually communicate how they're feeling, what their perspective is, while also encompassing the perspective of the other. Time out for a sip. So next one is, excuse me, interesting. In my experience, yada, 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 what's your experience about whatever the topic is? So you express your experience and you invite the other person to express theirs. In my experience, blank, and I feel blank. Again, you're sharing your experience. You're not imagining what the other person's experience is. You're not telling the other person what their experience is. You're expressing yours, and then you open it up to them sharing theirs. And then the third one is the preference. My preference is to blank, whatever. Is there a way both of our preferences can be part of whatever the conversation is about? And then finally, my preference is to avoid, let's say you're in a similar situation to something that happened before, you don't want to experience a negative timeline. So my preference is to avoid whatever negative time, you could say, you know, us getting into a negative timeline about this. How do you feel we can avoid that and honor your preference at the same time? So all of those, you know, expressing your perspective, expressing your experience, expressing your preferences, while at the same time inviting the other to also express their preferences, perspectives, and experiences. So in the end, everybody feels heard, the connection is maintained, you can be creative, nothing gets shut down. You know, it just opens up everything for compassion, connection, collaboration.
Oh, Carrie, I love those. And it takes time to first to have the, well, not take time, but you have the awareness that what, you know, I'll speak for myself, what I was doing wasn't working as far as communication and the way, the energetic of where I was coming from when I, you know, would want to address a situation with a friend or, you know, whatever relationship it may be. And so it takes, you have to, you know, first off, you have to have the desire to want to change things, right? And to grow. And so I have been, you know, I constantly, it's a daily practice of
right. It is. Yeah.
Right. And making them habits, you know, reprogramming the neural networks in our brains. You know, I know we're not much on the brains. We're all about the heart, but we learning to work with it. A dear brother of mine, he says, and I have it written on my refrigerator, the heart is the architect, the brain is the builder. And I love
Yeah,
that.
that's beautiful. Yeah, that's beautiful.
I love that. I love that. And I also feel, just touching on what on what you said, like I don't have, I'm learning, right? I'm learning. We're learning, we're growing, we're evolving. And I mess up. I sometimes I do things that I wish I wouldn't have, or I wish I would have worded them differently or said them differently. But the difference is, Carrie, and I feel you would probably agree, is own it. Okay, I messed up, or I should have done that differently. And how can I make this better? How can I turn this into a positive? And I know for me, I love to just be able to, if I'm in a place that is safe, like with Lucia, she provides this safe place that I can just be authentic and be myself. And it seems as though you're more open to sharing, versus being closed off, because you're not going to have somebody who's judging you, even if you did get something, quote, wrong. So I find that is so important for me. And also, when you talked about, a conversation, or what we're going to get into about conversations, I find that people just, they love to, let me at least express how I'm feeling. And that it's like the energy is, it's kind of dissipate, or it lessens, because we want to be heard, right? We want to express ourselves. So, okay. Well,
So,
yeah, go.
may I dovetail off of that? Perfect example. Is it, here's an opening phrase. Is it possible that I could get my full feelings out while you listen, and then you share your feelings? Because a lot of times what happens in conversations is somebody starts saying something. This is classic. We all know this. Oftentimes people are thinking what they're going to say back before you've even finished speaking. So to ask permission from the other to kind of set it up ahead of time, is it possible that you could allow me to get all my feelings out without interrupting me? And then I'll listen to all of yours without interrupting you. And that way, everybody gets an opportunity to really feel heard. Again, the connection is maintained, it's not broken. And you've got a foundation there from which to explore, build under comprehension, understanding with each other, and move forward, rather than one person getting shut down at the beginning. And that's why those opening phrases are so valuable, because they kind of set the stage for a positive experience with each other, rather than, one party getting triggered, and then it d dissolve dis you know dissolves and you're off to the races.
That's right. That's right.
So how do we get here so quickly? Well, because one person got triggered. So asking, if you're in a situation like that, especially in a marriage or a long-term partnership where, habits kind of build up, and, over time, sometimes people feel less heard. Using an opening phrase like that can kind of just set the stage for a really positive communication with each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as I experienced this, where I would tend to just hold everything in, and I wouldn't speak my truth. And your body, you start to physically experience the effects of not doing that. I mean, getting physical illness, sickness, illness, because you're not honoring yourself and how you feel.
There's a really brilliant gentleman out there. His name is Brad Blanton, and he has been presenting a concept called radical honesty for a very long time. And his definition of that is being willing to speak your truth without being afraid of the reaction that you're going to get from the other. That is very powerful. And it's just what you're saying. We get into patterns where we don't express our truth because we're afraid the other one is going to do something that isn't going to be fun. And so this practice of radical honesty is really beautiful, because if I get to a point where I'm no longer, and that's back to the authenticity, transparency, and vulnerability, if I can express my feelings, my experiences, my desires without being afraid of what's coming back to me, then at least I'm honoring my own sovereignty. And that's where this starts. You know, we didn't really discuss this at the beginning, but this entire arena of personal sovereignty starts with each one of us for us. This isn't a tool to, you know, get something. This is a tool to be something, be a particular way that really takes care of us by us as the starting point. And then from there, we go to being in the allowing space for the other, but it has to start with us.
Right, exactly. And how often, Carrie, do people not even have connection with who they are, with themselves, as a spirit here? Like, I know for myself, like, they keep you on the hamster wheel and they keep you going and going, and we all know the story. So you don't have that time to really explore who you are as an individual, what you like, what you don't like, what you want in your life, what do you want to create,
yeah, right?
So they set it up pretty
right,
right?
Well, and then on top of that, if we're DNA restricted from having all of our light accessible to us, it's kind of a double whammy. We get the programming and we get the limitation, and together it's crippling. Thank you, Q, for showing us another way.
Love you, Q, and Mermaid. Well, that here it leads into another question that I have for you. And I believe you just touched on it, but if there's anything else that you'd like to add, you know, how do we embody personal sovereignty while having a difficult conversation with someone that you love? Is there anything else that you wanted to add to that, Carrie?
Well, we've said a lot about it. All of what we've said so far kind of is a big ball that we can use for that. But if we get into something, sometimes what happens is we get triggered so quickly, we're in reaction. Remember how Q called it the emotional reaction cycle, recycling? We get into that so quickly. So one of the gifts that Mermaid has given us is the pause. So I would say the pause, and then breathing into our hearts. I know biologically we breathe through our mouth and our nose, but I've trained myself over time to actually imagine that the air is coming in and out of my heart, and I get myself anchored there before I open my mouth. So that I'm in a heart space before I don't react anymore or get triggered anymore. I have the capacity now, because of all the gifts we've been given from Q and the awareness of sovereignty, to anchor myself in my heart. And also, remember when we were kids, we were told to count to 10. If we got upset, well, it occurred to me somewhere along the line that two things happen when we count to 10. Number one is we break the connection to the anger point. But the other thing is we're breathing the 10 times we're counting. And as we're breathing, we're actually changing our frequency.
Yes.
So pausing, breathing into our hearts, and then coming from a place of, and I'm going to introduce another tool here, choosing my highest frequency option in that moment, being aware that I have a choice in that moment. Q says to us all the time, every second, we choose, and we choose. So if we can do the pause and then breathe in and out of our hearts and anchor ourselves there, then we have the opportunity to make a choice that is different from a reactive experience. So we can choose the highest frequency option in that moment, in that conversation, in that situation. And it's a little bit tricky. Sometimes it's not the highest frequency option, but my highest frequency option. And I'm not saying that from the standpoint of selfishness at all, because it all starts with us. Every one of those second choices is ours. So we're the ones who got to make the decision in that second, how we're going to do our next now second. So if I'm choosing my highest frequency option in that second, number one, I'm embodying and honoring my own sovereignty. But what I've experienced watching that, using that tool, is most often it's also the highest frequency option for the other, because I'm creating a space of peace and I'm choosing something that works for me out of my sovereignty, and the other person can feel that.
That's right. That's so beautiful. Yes, I love that. I love that. Oh my gosh, we're getting so many awesome tools today. Well, Carrie, I wanted to ask you, and I want to let the audience know, the listeners know, that Carrie has created these beautiful play sheets, PDFs that are attached on my radio station page, BBS Radio. If you go on BBS and right click on the drop down menu on the side and go to Unstoppable Love with Lauren and Friends, and you can print out the PDF sheets to play with and explore. They're for self-exploration. So thank you so much, Carrie, for providing those. So I have two questions that I want to ask.
Okay.
What do you love and appreciate about yourself the most?
My playful spirit, my playfulness. I love experiencing life like a child, actually, and any opportunity to play. Any opportunity to play. I remember Keith said to me early on in our one-on-ones, what do you want to create? And instantly out of my mouth came playgrounds. I want to create playgrounds of every type for everybody, adult, children, everybody. And that's how the Play Place room actually came into existence, was me remembering that conversation with him. So playing, you know, playing with reckless abandon as a child, I would say.
Well, you've certainly inspired me to be more playful and go down that slide and go on that swing and
right.
Have fun.
Yeah.
And then my next question is, what is your superpower?
I don't know that I would call it a superpower, but something that I love is sharing and connecting. So I'm all about connecting and sharing. And it goes back to playing and having as much fun as possible.
Gosh, I love that, Carrie. I love it. I love it. Well, anything else you want to add?
Just big heart thank you to you for doing this, for being brave and courageous and creating a play place for us, because I know the actual name of your show is Unstoppable Love with Lauren and Friends. So I know that there are going to be wonderful friends and playmates that you're going to invite onto this platform with you. So thank you for being courageous and willing and creative in birthing a new play place for us.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thank you, Carrie, for being the first guest on the show. I'm sure many, many more times to come if you like. And just for being who you are and for how you've taught me on my journey. It's been life-changing.
And a joy for me, absolute joy.
All right, BB, I think we're ready to go. I think we're done. Thank you all so much for listening and joining us.
Bye, everybody.